You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we delve into the world of craft beer, liquor, and other beverages. All right, guys, another cool episode here at the Hopkins Brewing Company. Here in the brew house, I have a good co-host and my dear friend, Chad Hopkins. Chad, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, David. Thanks for being here.
Long time no see, dude.
I don't know.
I feel like every time we say that, I've seen you probably like the day before or like 2 days before. Like within the week. But we have a mutual friend, Rachel Bell, in front of us, and we're going to talk about and get to know her. Rachel, thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much for letting me be here.
Thanks for coming all the way from the East Coast to be on this podcast today.
Yeah, that is totally the reason I moved back to Utah.
I know. It's one of the reasons. It's one of many, right?
Yeah.
So we have a lot of mutual friends, and there's a lot of people who love you in this industry. I remember the first time meeting you was at a Pinewood Derby at Bewilder. And
that's a good time.
We became instant friends. I'm like, I got another chick, and then all of a sudden I found out you're leaving. And I'm like, what? You can't introduce someone super cool to me, and then all of a sudden she's leaving? That's bullshit. So, A, bullshit, Rachel. Bullshit. But then I'm glad you're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's honestly one of my favorite memories. It was a brewery Pinewood Derby. I think it was the second year in a row. And we were waiting. I was working Keto's at the time. We were waiting for the Keto's car to show up. And everyone was like, oh, you like make another one real quick, you know? But then it showed up. And so, but regardless, like we already were all working on this car and it became a joint brewery car. And it was like
collab car.
Yeah. And to me, that's just like, this is what this industry is about here. Like, we're all just like, oh, like, first of all, everyone was like, oh, you got to be a part of it. You know, like, gotta have a Keto's car. Let's help you. And then, but then we all just had fun building a car together.
Yeah, we made like some Frankenstein car and it worked. Awesome. Even though I don't think it ever won, but it was the sexiest car there.
Yeah.
100%, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's somewhere. I think it's at Bewilder right now. Yeah. So it still exists. It has a bunch of everyone's stickers on it and we all helped making it and we just kept slapping stickers on it. But like, that's a great example of why this, I think the community here is so awesome, is because we're all just in it together and we want to see everyone thrive and we want to, like, we have festivals coming up and competitions coming up. And I don't think any of us are like, oh, I hope so-and-so doesn't win. I hope we all kick ass.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you can walk away with, like, 15 medals plus, I'll be like, fuck yeah. Right?
Yeah. We want Utah to have that representation.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, yeah.
So, Rach, I'm going to start off with saying, who the hell are you? Where do you come from? Who are you? I've never, like, let's pretend like we've never met. Explain to me who you are, where you're from.
Sure. So, I grew up in a suburb of Atlanta, Georgia. Spent most of my life there. Went to Georgia State University.
That's Bulldogs, right?
No.
Who is it?
The Panthers. So you're thinking of UGA. They're up in Athens. That's the Bulldogs. We hate them.
We hate them. Got
this is going to be the most controversial episode that you have.
Okay, I'm going to edit this real quick.
So Georgia State's the Panthers, and they're sort of growing notoriety. I think they made it to at least like the Elite Eight once. They might have made it to the Final Four once in basketball. I don't know. I'm bad at that stuff. It's a good school. It's like right downtown Atlanta. And I studied anthropology there, specifically human skeletal remains. Did a thing called bioarchaeology. Like, I've done digs and like excavated human remains, worked in labs with that. That was my original like passion, love, background thing. Well, but before it was, originally I was into like cultural anthropology and stuff like that, and I took a forensics class and got hooked. So that was my jam. And then I took a year. I was supposed to just take a year off between degrees, moved to New York because my family's from there. Lived on Long Island for a little bit, and it was really fun. Decided that I needed to actually do more with my life because I couldn't get a job with a bachelor's in anthropology, and I was working in a coffee shop. That was my other thing. Like, I used to, I worked in coffee shops forever. So that was my first, like, beverage love, was coffee.
Ah, cool.
I was like, you know what? I should go back to grad school and try to make this work. So moved back to Atlanta. Ended up getting a job doing some sales in, like, the food service industry, which is important for how I got into beer. You know, so that was okay. But also, finally got into home brewing during that time period. with the person who I eventually married. Before we were even dating, he was literally the first guy who homebrewed who I was like, hey, I'm really interested in this. Like, let me know next time you do it. He was the first person ever to actually let me know. Like, hey, I'm brewing tomorrow. Come learn. So it's kind of cool. I started off doing all grain. I'm really spoiled in my home. Like, all grain and kegging instead of bottle conditioning. Never had to deal with exploding bottles. So kind of came on board with someone who already had a really solid foundation for homebrewing. It actually, the day I found out I got into grad school was the day that I got to drink my first homebrew, too.
Nice. That's really awesome cool. Day. That's a good memory.
You know, foreshadowing, I guess. But so I got into grad school, thought I was going to do something, either keep doing the bio arc thing or do something with public health, because I was into microbio and stuff like that. And Georgia State also had a really good public health program. CDC was right there. It was crossover. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. That'll be a career. That'll be cool. But then after my first semester, I had gotten really into homebrewing. And my ex Patrick, we were living together at that point, homebrewing all the time. We're like, oh, we should open a brewery. Cause at that point, Georgia really only had like 40 something breweries,
okay.
Which is not the case now. This was like 2015, 2016.
Okay.
And it was a lot like the Utah community. It was small, tight knit. Cause Georgia had some crazy beer laws too. So we're like, oh, we should open a brewery. It'll be easy. And I was like, oh, I'll do a sales and marketing internship. And, you know, and then we'll know everything. We'll be ready. So our favorite brewery, Monday Night Brewing, which is in Atlanta. They have two locations.
Great name,
there.
By the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They have a cool backstory. And they're just in the Southeast now. They're, I don't know exactly. I don't want to misspeak. But they're in a few states, but mostly Georgia. So that was our favorite brewery to go to. I was like, oh, I'll apply to their internship. And it was really competitive, but I got it because I had the homebrew background, but also that food sales background.
Oh,
so
nice.
I was like, yeah, So I was, so that was amazing. I think I beat out a lot of people for that. And it was cool. And like, they knew I was like, oh, you know, it'd be cool to brew. Like I love homebrewing, but commercial brewing is probably boring and annoying. Like, I was like, yeah, it can't be as fun, but I got to do some shadow brew shifts. And then I was like, oh no, this is what I want to do. I want to do this. I want to be a brewer. So my internship's up, but also important note, about a few weeks in, I was like, okay, this is cool. I want to work at breweries. I don't ever want to own one. Like, that's too much. Like, I'm like, we're crazy. No, we're not going to open a brewery. That's not going to happen. I was like, but I want to stay here. So my internship was up and I went to them and I was like, hey, how can I stay here? Like, is there any kind of like part-time job I can do? And so, because I was still getting my master's, I'm like, I can't just quit my master's, even though like I just want to work at a brewery full time now. Like, what am I doing? So I became an event and taproom manager part time, and also a packaging person part time, working on the packaging line. Because all the guys were like, cool, like you want to be a brewer, like start in packaging, you work your way up. You can figure out how to run this packaging line. You can figure out anything on the planet because, you know, it was a...
How big is that brewery, to put it into perspective?
30-barrel brew house.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure what the annual barrelage would have been when I first started there.
Probably a pretty big distribution chain, I would assume.
Pretty decent. Well, when I started there, they were just distributing across Georgia and in Alabama. But Georgia's distribution stuff is weird. So even though we're just in one state, we had like five distributors for the state. So, I mean, it was pretty solid. It was busy. It was, watching it grow over the 3 years I was there was also crazy. Like it went from like, oh, they'd brew maybe like a few times a week to like three brew shifts overnight, like boom, boom, boom. Like, it was a lot. I wish I actually had like barrel numbers and I don't. I even like on my way out here, I met up with another former coworker in Ohio. We were talking. I was like, what do you think it was? He was like, I don't know. Like, they were just like exponential growth, which was cool because great beer, fun company. So I was basically working two different part-time jobs there, trying to work my way up, but also getting this master's in anthropology. And eventually, I just tailored my degree to fit that. And so I did ancient brewing. And I did.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I did a practicum thesis instead of like writing a big publishable thing. I recreated an ancient beer from an actual like archaeological study. But like adapted it to do on a 5-barrel pilot system that we had. The cool thing about this particular recipe, it was from a beer in China, and they found evidence of barley being used as an adjunct grain like 2,000 years before barley had been known to be in China before. So, so called it Ni Hao Barley, which is hello barley, Chinese. But because it had that, we were able to be like, okay, well, for the actual production version, like, it's going to be mostly barley. But we used a bunch of other, because all those, like, crazy ancient grains now, like, they're really expensive. Like, einkorn wheat, Job's Tears, which is kind of like a puffed barley, and it also had millet in it. So, like, that stuff was all expensive to get. They still let me buy a lot of it put in. But we also put yams in the mash. And then there were no hops. I did dried lotus bulbs instead in place of hops. And then also longan fruit, which is like lychee. We put that in and fermented with sake yeast. So honestly, it's like, was that even a beer? I don't know.
Interesting.
Frankenstein beer.
I mean, it could qualify as maybe a grew it. I don't know.
I'm curious. Let's recreate this, Chad.
Yeah, it's kind of like Dogfish had started doing some stuff like that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Pat McGovern. He's like the beer archaeologist, or like fermented beverage archaeologist. Because that was the other cool thing in really studying this. Ancient beverages like that, like a lot of it was what we would consider to be like blends, like beer wine blends and stuff like that. It's just so cool. But also in studying that, it made me appreciate beer even more, because really like every culture, like every continent had its own version of a fermented beverage. And usually there would be something that would be like grain-based and it would be more like beer. And it's just, it's something that really historically, like prehistorically, like unites humanity.
It's true.
Like spontaneous fermented beverages, it's a part of our history. So
didn't Jesus pass out wine? Huh? Fermented beverage? It's like, I think it's everyone has, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a cool thing to study. It was a cool project to do. But also, so for the launch of this beer, I made like a educational night in the tap room, and I had multiple people from Georgia State, because I also had an applied microbiologist on my committee. And they were actually looking, I made some partnerships with them because they were looking to be like, hey, we'll like run beer samples for free for breweries because we can. Because we're like a university and we want to do this stuff. So I did some like a gas chromatography, mass spectrometry stuff. I hope I didn't just mess up that word. I don't think I did though. So it's like, but it's a way to sort of like quantify flavors that are present in stuff. I won't get too deep into it, but yeah, I just did some really cool analysis on these beers. And yeah, but it was also a way to like, you know, like, hey, general public, like we've got a cool beer release, but we've got like all these other like booths from like other scientists, and we had stuff from like archaeologists and things like that, like other people from my department. And it was really cool. And at the time, and so we also, we put it in bombers to sell to go as well. Oh, and it turned out a little funky. We don't know why, because we did not mean for it to be spontaneous, but it turned out a little tart. And apparently the bacteria in it was something that's found in cheese sometimes. It was like a weird, it got weird. We have no idea how that happened, but it was only like 3.5%.
Oh, wow.
And it was nice because people in Georgia did not revolt. They didn't care. They still liked it.
Nice.
So if we tried to release that in Utah, people would be like, I'm not drinking that. Yeah, it was cool, but the bombers of that at the time were like the best selling beer that they'd ever released, like the fastest selling beer, which was really cool. But yeah, so that was my master's, and then immediately after that, they're like, "Hey, come be full time packaging manager because we need someone to do that." I was like, "Okay, sure," and like that's the next step up. It was really more like being a maintenance person though, and I'm very bad at that. So you know, it was a thing, But then I got into safety, and that's one of my major things I do in the industry now is safety stuff. But I got into that because they were starting a safety committee, and I was like, and before I was manager, I was like, hey, like no one in packaging even knows about your beer. Like they, because at the time they were just getting people who were like, oh, you just need some kind of job. Like here, just show up tomorrow and teach you how to package beer. I was like, hey, like, no one here knows about safety. No one even knows about your beer. Like, let's not leave packaging out of safety. And they're like, hey, cool, you care about this, you should just run the safety committee.
I
was like,
I signed yourself up for that, didn't you?
Yeah, I was like, okay, sure. But I got really into it. And there was a lot that we needed to do at the brewery for that. And they're opening a second location. So there's a lot of like proactive stuff. So I was doing that. But in the course of that, I got married. And then we decided to do like a 3-month around the world honeymoon. So we had to quit our jobs and we did that. Came back. And he was an engineer. So I was like, okay, well, you're going to be the driving force for wherever we move. For jobs, because I'm just a lowly brewery person. So he was looking around for jobs, and he found a place in Salt Lake that was hiring. It was a cool robotics company, and initially I was like, ew, Utah. Like, why? Do they even have beer? Like, right? I couldn't even work there. So he was like, well, I'm going to apply anyways. He's like, they're snowboarding. I'm like, okay. Like, I love that. That's something. In the meantime, like, we're also like taking like BuzzFeed quizzes and stuff, like, where should I move? And like both of us kept getting like Utah, Salt Lake City. And I was like, this is all lies. The internet's full of lies. But we finally come out here and I was just like, oh, this is cool. And we went to a bunch of breweries, obviously, because we're both into that. And just loved Salt Lake. And we're like, okay, let's do this. And came out here and figured out a place to live first week, and then I spent one day being a stay-at-home housewife, and I was like, nope, can't do this. So I printed off resumes, went around to a bunch of breweries, and none of them even like really like looked at. They're like, oh, you want to be like a server? I'm like, no, no. I have like I want to do production. I have production experience. And then I finally went to Epic, and I always forget to ask her about this, see if she remembers. I think it was actually Kryn from Epic who was like, we don't really have anything right now, but you should go to Keto's. Like, they're our friends, and they just opened, and they might need somebody who could be versatile, do a lot of things. I was like, okay. So I went to Keto's, and the first person I meet there is Amanda, works at Hopkins, and gave her my resume, and she was the first person who actually like read through it. She was like, oh, you can do this and this, and she's like, you have a master's, that says a lot about you. I'm like, thanks, because like no one even, and you know, I'd even tried jobs outside of the beer industry, and like everyone was like, what is this resume, it means nothing. So she was like, well, you know, like, we just opened, all I could give you now is like a door shift or something a week, but like, we want to keep you, like, you seem really cool and useful. And I was like, done, sure. I haven't even tried your beer, but you make me feel valued as a person.
That's cool.
But then I tried their beer, and like, honestly, I feel like Keto's is the brewery I would have wanted to work for had I actually done the research. But it was just cool. It's just like, they made me feel welcome, and that was important to me. And that's cool because like, that's like their vibe is like being welcoming and being a place for everybody. So yeah, then just kind of kept doing stuff at Keto's, and that just sort of expanded into me doing all the stuff for Keto's.
When did you guys move out here?
Like 2018, I believe. Yeah. Okay. We got married spring of 2017, and it was like February, I think, 2018. Yeah.
Nice. So early, right after Keto's open, pretty much.
Yeah, I think they'd been open for like 3 months, maybe.
Nice.
It was still super new, but yes, I just kind of kept like filling gaps that I saw there. So I started doing marketing stuff, and like self-taught myself like a lot of marketing stuff, some like graphic design stuff. I started getting really involved with all of the like charities and like the social outreach stuff that they're really into. And that was really cool. And I feel like that stuff is the stuff that like really, I think, tied my anthropology degree to beer really strongly for the first time. And I did help with packaging. I worked in the tap room for a long time and then ended up like supervising the tap room, like brought people in to like straight up manage it. But then also like I was like their like next person to go to help them out, and just, I don't know, just anything I could do to help. So again, like didn't like still kind of like missed out on like the whole like production track there, but like, I don't know, it was still fun. Like I I really loved my job there, like everything I got to do for them, for the community. But also, as this was all going on, I think it was shortly after I'd started at Keto's, the Utah Brewers Guild had the Brewers Association safety ambassador come through and do a talk for guild members on brewery safety. And I had met this guy previously in Atlanta. Same thing, like he, for the Georgia Brewers Guild, like he came and did an event and I was doing safety at the time. So we were talking, he was like, oh, you know, you should join the BA safety subcommittee. I was like, oh, that'd be cool. But I'm about to like, you know, go travel for like a long time. I'll hit you up later. And, you know, I never did again, but then seeing him in person, I was like, I don't know if you remember me. And we were talking and I was like, you still need people on that committee thing? He was like, yeah, shoot me an email. So then I ended up joining, the Brewers Association, henceforth in this conversation, to just be called the BA because it's okay. Shorter. So I joined their safety subcommittee, which is, it's a subcommittee from the Technical Brewing Committee, which was, I think, like one of like the first committees that like they founded. And it's all, so it's an organization, like they have people who work for them. They have like CEO and stuff like that. But most of everything that happens through the BA, it's all people from member breweries making up committees and being on the board. So it's a very like member driven organization, which I also love. There's a bunch of different subcommittees that are all also part of the Technical Brewing Committee. So I was on safety for a little bit and I just like started like stepping up. You're like, oh, we want to do a resource on this. Like, here's a draft. And people were like, whoa, you're devoting so much time. And I'm like, not really. It's not too hard. But yeah, so they're like, hey, like you should sit on the technical committee as well. Cause also they're like, we need some smaller brewery voices in these groups. Which is true. And I would say to any professional brewer listening, like not even brewer, like if you work for a member brewery, like join some of these committees. Like, you know, if you're a member, like get your voice, get your input. If there's anything you're passionate about, you know, step up and do it. I think it seems intimidating to a lot of people, but you know, like if you're passionate about something, you have something to contribute.
That's kind of what craft is built on, is like it's passion. Like this business isn't like really run by money. I mean, that's the goal, like the end result maybe. But ultimately, this business craft is just all about passion. So I think that is important. Like she introduced me to like there's a brew pub committee. We're a little brew pub here.
Yeah, Sugar House. Should be on that.
Like there's a brew pub committee. You should be on that. I'm like, oh shit. Like I had no idea. So like,
yeah.
So I'm definitely going to sign up for that. Like that sounds fun to me.
It's really cool.
Talk to other brew
pubs. I'm just sitting here in silence because my mind's being blown right now. I'm just sitting here like, oh my God.
Also, is really, we haven't opened a beer yet.
I know.
Like, oh, no, I was kind of waiting until she gets to like her previous brewery.
Oh yeah, I guess maybe we should. We're almost there. Oh. We're almost there, I promise. Anyway, so yeah, so they, so I joined the technical committee, and then at some point, because safety actually like is a super busy subcommittee, like with all the resources that we try to put out, like responding to people's questions and stuff. It's a top priority for like everyone at the BA to like have a lot of safety resources. Right. So they're like, hey, like we could use a co-chair, like. Would you want to co-chair the committee? I was like, yeah, sure. So then all of a sudden, like, I'm extra busy doing all these, like, extracurricular things. But also, I created a little safety subcommittee for the Utah Brewers Guild. Because, you know, why not? We should have that.
Yeah.
So had a lot of extracurricular stuff going on.
And oh, yeah, that was fun. I was on that.
You were. With you. Yeah, you hosted meetings. Yeah, I think you actually still have like a handout or something.
We started growing that thing and then COVID fucked shit up.
We'll bring it back. Yeah, pretty much like that's kind of what happened and things kind of slowed down. I was getting divorced during COVID as well. So it was an interesting time and the earthquake and I just about died. I don't know. Not actually died from the earthquake.
2020 was weird for everyone.
Almost like died so from anxiety weird. After that earthquake. That was like the final straw. But yeah, so then, you know, sort of next steps in my life, I have family in Vermont. I have family like all across the country. Like my family was not from Georgia, so we were like the weird ones down there. So I have family in Vermont, and my cousin had just moved back there. And she sent me, and I kind of mentioned, like, you know, like, I might want to, like, move or do something. Like, I love Utah, but, you know, I came out here, you know, with my ex, and, like, it wasn't totally my choice. And, like, I don't know. It was, like, I felt like I needed to do something for me. And she sent me this job posting for a brewery logistics manager at Von Trapp Brewing in Vermont. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I'd be great at this. Like, that's interesting. But I was like, ah, they probably won't even respond to me. And I actually, my favorite thing, like, I got drunk one night and it was like 10 o'clock at night. I was like, fuck it, I'll just apply. I still have no idea what my cover letter said, but like sent off my resume and some like spur of the moment cover letter. And a couple weeks later, like, they're like, hey, I was down in Moab. And I got an email, like, first thing in the morning from this guy. He's like, hey, you want to set up a time to interview? And I was like, holy shit. It's like, okay. And the whole time I was like, but do I want to leave? Like, no. And I just kept being like, okay, well, you know, like, if it seems like it's, like, this kind of company, if it's this, if they make, like, this much of an offer or something. And they just, it just kept going. They kept hitting all the boxes. And so I was like, you know what? Like, let's try it. I've been feeling like something, like, I got to change something. Like, something's got to happen. This was a crazy series of events that led to me getting this job offer. And so I did it. I was like, oh, it's the middle of a pandemic and it's December. Let's move across the country to Vermont. And so, yeah, so working at Von Trapp. And when I say Von Trapp, literally like the Sound of Music Von Trapps. They fled to Vermont because it reminded them of Austria. And then they opened a resort. And then like 10 years ago, they also opened a brewery. And they make traditional German beer styles. And so I guess this now brings us to the first beer that I brought, which is Von Trapp's Vienna Lager. And some of you back in December might have tried a small batch, or there were two versions of a small batch Vienna Lager that I brewed at Hopkins, actually. And it was my going away beer.
Your going away beer, I remember that.
Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Viennas are actually like, if people like, what's your favorite style of beer? Like, I say Vienna Lagers. So, yeah, so this is Von Trapp's Vienna Lager. I guess we should break into it now. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm super. So
you say they opened a resort?
Oh, yeah. It's like a, yeah, it's a fancy resort type place. They have an amazing cross-country skiing center that becomes a mountain bike center in the spring and summer.
Wow.
They have, it was weird, like they have sleigh rides. Sweet. Like that was like a work thing. I don't know. I think I did get a discount on them. I would have gotten like discounts on massages, but like the spa wasn't open because COVID. Like it was crazy. Like nice. it was such a weird, like my life was sort of like a Hallmark Disney movie musical for a minute.
I'm okay with that. That's really cool. So their website says a little of Austria, a lot of Vermont.
Yes.
So when did they start? I have no idea. Do you know the story behind Von Trapp?
The brewery?
Yeah. I want to know all these things now.
Oh, man. So they actually, it started off really small in the basement of what is now just their like little like coffee house and deli thing. Because there's a few different, like, it's a resort. There's like a few different places to eat or whatever on the property. So start off in a basement. And yeah, I think that was about 10 years ago. And they just started growing. They started doing really well. And then a couple years ago, three at the most, and I'm sorry, I really should know more about this, they decided to like really like go big, and they built this incredible brewery and beer hall. It's super sustainable. I didn't learn this until I actually already left, but like they like cleared trees to build this big place, and apparently like they tried to use all of the wood from those trees in the building of it.
Oh, that's cool.
It's solar. That's cool. I think it's entirely solar, just about. Like, there's solar panels on the roof and everything.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's a really awesome brewery. It's a 50-barrel Rolex brewing system.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's big. It was a big boy.
Big brewery.
Including the contract brewing that they do. I think they were around, before I came on, it was like 24,000 barrels annually.
Wow.
It's
pretty good.
So it was a lot. Wow. Distributed all over the East Coast. I think like DC area, like Virginia, Maryland, I think was like the furthest south they went. They're all over New England. They're in Pennsylvania. Nice. So you could maybe see them if you go to Philly.
I'm assuming a lot of like German, Austrian inspired beers.
Pretty much exclusively. The core, like they do the Vienna's a core. They do a Dunkel, a Helles, a Pilsner, and a Kolsch.
I love all these styles.
Chad and I just, we're dying right now.
Yeah, it is the Crispy Boy Brewery.
Helles, Pilsner, Kolsch, Vienna, and Dunkel. My God. That's their.
Well, let's drink this. And cheers.
Prost.
Prost.
Yeah, so it just, so I was very busy, like doing all, so I dealt with all the distributors, dealt with the inventory, and so I did that, but I also was like physically managing the warehouse, so I spent a lot of time on the forklift, which was, I mean, it was fun, but it was exhausting.
The Vienna on that, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I wish, you know, people could actually like see the beer that we're drinking. It's really light for me. It's really light in color for a Vienna, but you know, it's really good. You still get the malt.
Not over the top sweet. It's perfect.
I like balanced malty beers. I like hoppy beers too. Anything that's balanced really, but yeah, I gravitate towards like red ales or Vienna lagers. Like I like being able to pick up on like,
this is really cool. You kind of got spoiled at like almost a lager house over at the old beer hall in Von Trapp. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, so the brewery that we did contract brewing for, and I'm wearing their hoodie right now, Upper Pass Brewing, they made all the Hazy Boys. So even though as a brewery we didn't necessarily make any hazies, we still did. So nice. At first I was excited, like, cool, I'm gonna be at the one Vermont brewery that doesn't make a hazy IPA. It's like, haha, joke's on you.
I'm sure would they serve those beers though too? Like,
no,
really,
they didn't. They only went to the distributor, because actually like legally there we would have had to still buy it back from the distributor.
So
their whole thing was like, no, like we're only gonna sell our beers on draft. And it's a really cool beer hall. Great, really great food too. There's a disc golf course around it. I don't know. Anybody going up to Vermont, definitely go up to Stowe and go to Von Trapp.
Man, it is a cool place. Rach, this is really cool. I'm in love with this.
Oh, yeah, this is delicious.
I want to get the variety pack. They said they had a variety pack with, let's see.
You mean the bane Helles, of my existence?
Helles, Vienna style, the Pilsner, and the Kolsch. Yes. Man, that's a pack Chad and I would die for.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll see what I can do off the record.
Man, all lagers? A variety pack with all lagers? Is that a thing anymore?
Yes, please. Very rare. I just picked one up from Prost.
From Prost, yeah.
When I was in Colorado, I like, picked up a variety pack of lagers, and I was very happy.
Man. This is beautiful, though. It's got a...
I mean, Bohemian. Shout out to our local Bohemian. They've got a...
Good job of doing that.
Local lager...
Oh, yeah.
Variety pack. That's,
yeah.
Get it at Costco, too.
There you go.
Good to know.
Rach, what's your favorite part about working at Von Trapp?
It's got to be the people that I worked with. Because that was the other thing. Going there, I knew, I was going to be the only woman on the whole, production side. So, you know, the thing is, I don't like to assume that anything's going to go a certain way, but thinking about it, I was kind of nervous initially going there, we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be one or two people who are like, oh, there's this like young woman person. Cause at the time I was only 29. I was like, this young lady, I think she's going to tell us how to move beer around. Kind of mentally preparing, okay, that's probably going to come up at some point. And that was so not the case. All of my coworkers there, there was no hint of discrimination. Everyone treated me with respect, treated me like an equal. But in general, you know, everyone was going through so much with COVID.
Right.
We were understaffed. But everybody had each other's backs. Like, even we were like, oh, it's a shitty day. How are we going to do this? Ha ha. It's fine.
That's really cool.
You know, we could all laugh about it. Everyone checked in with everybody. It was cool. They truly, they have a great team of people there.
Yeah.
But also, everyone cared. you know, so much about the product. You know, people would speak up about stuff. Like, people would have ideas. It was a really great environment.
I like that. Sounds like a family up there. And it sounds like the same environment we have here in Salt Lake and Utah. I mean, where we're all kind of a family. We're all helping each other out. And then in kind of a darkish, weirdish time for you in your life, you had to leave Utah to go to Vermont to, like, a kind of another family on the East Coast. So it's kind of a cool situation where you got to, like, leave kind of this, you know, rough spot you were in, that this family here. Because I know you had a lot of friends. You still have a lot of friends here.
Oh, yeah.
And then you went to Vermont to a place that was accepting. It was awesome. They all cared about beer, which, thank God. And then they all cared about you, thank God. And, yeah, that's really cool. You got to see the Vermont and see what it's for and kind of like the inside scoop of Vermont. It's really cool.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it was a weird time to be there with COVID because, I mean, they is like almost the opposite of Utah. Like, they were still, like, shut, like, with, like, a lot of restrictions and stuff. Like, people were still wearing masks up until, like basically, like, 2 weeks before I left. Like, the governor waited until they hit 80% of the state being vaccinated before they were like, okay, like, no more rules. Like, we're normal again. So, like, I only had a very short warm-up before moving back to Utah. With that, but still, like, I was still, like, I still made friends. I was still able to go out and do things, but it wasn't quite the same. But, like, most breweries were still to go only up until, like, that that 2 week period.
That hurts your economy for sure, especially in that beer industry. Fascinating. Well, Rach, real quick, we're gonna go to take a little intermission, and when we come back, we want to talk about more beers you brought from Vermont.
Oh, hell
yeah!
Does
that sound good?
It sounds amazing.
Chat about you, bathroom break.
That's it.
Okay, we'll be right back, my friends.
Tastemasters is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. By using the code Tastemasters, you will receive 10% off your ticket upon checking out. Food only. But guys, it's badass food. They have chicken sandwiches, Thai wings, poutine. They have brunch every Saturday, Sunday. The food is fantastic. One of the best in town. Again, use the code Tastemasters upon checking out. 10% off your entire ticket, minus the alcohol. Guys, let's keep it local by supporting local. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you want to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms. Hey guys, it's David here. We are starting a Patreon, which is kind of like a tip jar, but digital. Basically, what it does is it helps enhance the content of our podcast. If you like what you hear, want to help us out, go ahead and head to www.patreon.com/tastemasters and subscribe. Anything will help.
All right, guys, back from the restroom break. I feel better about you, Chad.
I feel great.
All right, Rachel, you brought some beers from Vermont, and you're ready to open one, and it's got the coolest label ever. So explain this one to us, if you will.
Okay, so this is I had to bring a Hazy Boy.
I mean, from the region. I mean, it's right. Fine.
And I should have brought one from Upper Pass, the brewery of contract brewed with it, Fun Trap. But I decided to take a different route, and I brought one from a nano brewery called Big Tree, because they are affiliated with, like, my community bar that I found in Vermont, which was, like, where I made friends. Like, I had, like, work friends, but, like, it's different. Like, these were, like, the friends that I made in the small town where I lived. It's called The Reservoir, or The Res, and they have this, like, nano brewery side project called Big Tree. And so, like, it's definitely one of, like, the best beer bars in Vermont. Like, they have really cool stuff on draft, great food. So if you're in Waterbury, go to The Res. But
I like that.
Yeah.
Road trip, Chad.
Yep.
Oh yeah. But so this is one of their beers. And so, like, they have, they do, like, obviously, like, have a can, they can, and they distribute a little bit, but, you know, they also have their beers on draft at the bar. And sorry, I'm, like, trying to pour and talk at the same time. But I can smell
it from here.
Yep. Yeah. And they made a lot of IPAs. They made a good Pilsner too, actually, which is called Glampin, which is a great name.
I like that.
That
fits for Vermont.
But,
perfect.
But this is called Diamond Hands. It's 100% Citra.
Nice.
And it is my favorite. It's a double IPA.
It's a big boy.
Yeah.
Is it really?
eight some?
Oh, seven. That's okay. Great for a double. That's where a double IPA should be for me. Because then you can still drink more double IPAs.
There's Citra right there, huh? Hella Citra? Yeah. I expect this to be a little skunky and oniony when I...
Huh.
It's not, though.
Smells.
Which is...
It smells glorious.
Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks for sharing this.
Yeah, no problem. And also, like, I prefaced this. Like, all this stuff came back in a car driving across the country in summer. It wasn't a cooler, but I was like, oh, I hope these still taste good. And
oh, yeah. It's great.
That's a haze, boy, for sure. It tastes hazy to me.
I can taste the haze.
I can taste the haze. Mm-hmm. Not bad, though.
Haze for days. Is that a name for something? That should
probably somewhere.
It's got to be.
So this is called a Big Tree, right? Is that what you call it? Big Tree Brewing?
Yeah, Big Tree Brewing. It's like a one-barrel system. Super nano. It is a cool label. Again, no one can see. No one can see what we're drinking.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of this and post it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's got a guy's hands holding a diamond, and on his wrist it says, "He's still in, I'm still in." Probably a Jesus quote.
Nice.
I have no idea.
It's delicious. Yeah, the label's awesome. Artwork's cool.
I like this a lot.
Yeah.
Fascinating, Rage. So this was your favorite pub you went to, and then this is their local. They had on draft, too?
Yeah.
Right here? Sweet.
Yeah. There's something about drinking New England IPAs from New England.
Huh. It's almost like we're there.
Interesting.
But there's there's a lot of great New Englands. Out here in Utah and across wherever. But when you drink them from the region, they just, something about them.
It could be the water. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know I don't know anything about the process, but.
This tastes more fresh than I thought it would be.
Same. Holds up really well, guys. If you're listening, I'm going to make sure you listen to this.
I think I'm trying to read it. I think this was canned back in March. That's what it looks like.
So what, 4 months? 3.5, 4 months? Hops are
still... End of March. So 4 months.
4 months?
4 months.
Surprising.
It's done well.
Like, yeah, surprisingly. And the haze, I mean, there it is.
Yeah.
It's a hazy boy.
Yeah, it stayed. It's great.
So, Rachel, while we're drinking this one, what was your favorite part about being in Vermont?
I should have a better answer for this, but it's sort of just... All the things, it's like Utah light in some respects. Like you've got mountains everywhere, but they're smaller, but it's still, I mean, at this point I can't live anywhere where I'm not seeing mountains around me all the time. I don't think I would have been really sad if that was not the case wherever I moved. So, you know, you still saw the mountains everywhere. Lots of great outdoor activities. And you had, I mean, great food, great beer everywhere, but it was still like a little next level because it's so like everything is like even more like kind of farm to table, like also like a lot of like very like hyper local, so that was great. But I don't know, I did make a lot of good friends and I got a lot closer to my family out there, which was cool. I lived with a really cool dog, a Malamute. Freya. Shout out to Freya. Yeah.
Like, her on Instagram.
She's my best friend for sure. It was also the other cool thing though. Like if it was clear enough, like you could see the Milky Way from my aunt and uncle's house at night.
Really?
Like
That's
you
really
did
cool.
not, it felt a lot like Salt Lake, like small town vibes. But you know, it felt more remote. So maybe that. Maybe
less noise.
Yeah.
So what's, what was your least favorite part about being on the East Coast?
Being away from Utah? I'm gonna go with drivers from Massachusetts.
Wow.
No, that's a hot take.
There were some Utah drivers?
Yeah, it's different. It's a different, you know, there's like kind of like driving cultures in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
So it was very different. I don't know. Worst part was I was getting burnt out at my job. Like I loved my job, but you know, it was definitely like, it was a lot. It was more than 40 hours for sure. It was one of those. And I was getting too tired to want to go out and do things.
And hang out, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to be able to go out and enjoy.
Especially for how young you are, you wanted to still be out and do things. Yeah. You're only 29 and a half. It's fine. Right? So did you ever get, did you ever see yourself staying in the East Coast long term? Or were you just kind of like, you know what, I just feel out of place, got to come back home?
I think maybe later in my life. So I guess maybe I'll say the other thing. Like, there was nobody really single in my age range. Like, it's the population is half of the metro population of Salt Lake for the whole state. It's like 625,000. And at that point, like, people have paired off. Like, all of my coworkers, like, all of these guys, like, who are around my age, like, pretty much all married with kids or, like, committed relationship for, like, long term, like, bought house. Like, you know, I was, like, the only single person.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, it, like, I, you know, I tried some dating apps or whatever. Like, it just, I don't know. And I don't need that in my life, but it's something, like, you know, at this point, like, you know, I would like to have that in my life again.
Who doesn't want to feel wanted? I get you.
Right. Like, it's nice to have a partner. So I could see, like, if, like, later, you know, down the road, like, married with a family or something like that, or even just, even on my own, like, later in life, I could see myself moving back there. But the thing is, like, this, okay, so the snow is not as bad as people say.
I feel like I'm envisioning Rocky IV kind of snow. Like, we're talking... He's going, you know, the montage when he's going up the mountains trying to fight the Russian? Like, he's training out in Russia. That's what I feel like Vermont snow is. And so that's not how it is?
It can't. So
see, you're hesitating.
I'm hesitating because I'm afraid to admit that I have not seen the
movie. My God, Rachel. We got to educate you. Rocky IV.
I do. That's the one where, like, I can change, you can change, people can change.
Yeah,
right? Okay,
yeah,
I know that. Russian, yeah. I know that quote. Like, I was, like, literally in... When I was in packaging, someone, like, made me watch that because they were quoting it at me.
Gotcha.
I was
talking about, Rocky's going up the mountain in Russia, and it's, like, snow up to his fucking hips. He's just going up. Like, I just envision 3 to 4 or 5 feet tall of snow banks.
So I did everywhere. A hike like that, and it was the hardest hike I've ever done. I'm talking about, like, snow in terms of, like skiing, snowboarding. There were powder days that were comparable to, like, a bad Utah powder day, which is still a good day. So I was like, okay, like, I can hang with this. This is all right. But then, like, there are bad days. It's the wind. It's super windy out there, which no one warned me about. Like, lifts will get put on wind hold, yikes. And you're just there, scary. Like, shivering. Yeah, it's just not fun. And then everything's blown out, obviously. And then you get to the ice. And so it can be all right. But, you know, I was like, okay, I still want to snowboard before it breaks my body. And I should be out west for that.
Gotcha.
So that's another, but also, you know, like, all the crazy Utah adventure stuff, right? I was like, I want to enjoy that in my 30s, you know, like, and I could still, like, live in Vermont and be, like, 50 or 60 and, like, cross-country ski and still hike and stuff, but, like, for as active as I want to be right now, I feel like being out west just makes more sense for me personally.
There you go.
So, but, you know, I'm from the East Coast, and it was cool being back in, like, East Coast forests. Like, you can tell, at least, like, I can tell. It's like, oh, like, specifically, like, this, like, certain piney smell. There's a certain smell, I think, for East Coast forests, and it was really awesome to experience that again. So it's, like, a little, like, recharge, like, sense of my past, sense of home. But, like, the whole time, I just missed Utah. You brought up, like, friends. I still, like, and I love my Vermont friends, and I can't wait to go back and visit them. But, you know, like, my Utah friends, I feel like even more so than a lot of my Georgia friends when I moved out here, like, they really kept in touch. And even though, like, I was going through some personal shit, like, I was not always the best version of me. But, like, you know, they gave me space to do that and, like, still appreciated me and loved me for me. And, yeah, so that was huge. But also people in the beer industry, Chad included, were like, we need you back here. Like, you're like...
Yeah, we all talked about you a lot while you were gone.
That's what I keep hearing from, like, random people, which is so cool. Like, especially going through, I think, a period of time where I felt kind of unwanted, and then, like, realizing that, like, I have a community here that appreciates me and wants me and that I want to be a part of. Like, and that's the thing, like, you know, I could have tried to join the Brewers Guild in Vermont. I could have, they didn't have a Pink Boots chapter there because they had one and, like, the women were just like, they just, like, let it go because, like, no one cared about it. But here, like, Pink Boots, you know, like, and this is the thing, like, it's way too small of a community right now, like, the Utah Pink Boots chapter, it's a great community, but one of the things, like, coming back, I'm like, you know, like, it's not reflective of the actual women in the industry. Like, we need more women from, like, all areas of the industry. Like, we need more women who, like, yeah, maybe they're just servers. I did that in air quotes, but like, you're not just a server. Like, you're still a part of this community. You're still a woman in this industry. You have a voice. And also, like, I mean, there's not enough diversity. Like, there's not enough color, because there are a lot of women of color in the Utah beer industry. And I definitely want our chapter to start reflecting that. So, you know, there's work to be done, but the foundations are there, and it's an awesome community of women that I'm really stoked to be a part of. But like, Vermont didn't have that. And it didn't have, you know, like what we do, like we'll go around, like all Utah brewers go around to other breweries and like support each other, like go try new beers when they're released, like hang out, work from other breweries. And like, that's just not a thing in Vermont. Like,
that's weird.
Yeah. Like you can call up another brewery and be like, oh, hey, like, do you have any extra like Munich or something? Like, can we get some ingredients? And they'll do it. But it's like, but they're also like, they're not going to stay and like have a beer with you. So like, it's not like Utah is so unique. Right now, in terms of the community,
it's like foreign to me. I don't know what that.
Yeah, we're such a cool little community out here, but we're growing. Like, we're so new out here that, you know, we've got some great breweries that have been here for a long time, but they're huge and just kind of disconnected from the small guys.
Ironic in a way.
And yeah, but this is the thing. Like, I felt like, you know, I could try to. I even like contacted Pink Boots, like, hey, can I try to restart the chapter? Can I do all this? And I was like, kind of like amped to try to make that happen in Vermont, but it seemed like I kept getting like subtle pushback. I felt like from Vermont, I was like, it just didn't feel totally right. And I was like, you know what? Like, I can actually like, I feel like do more for Utah. You know, like I can get active on the guild again.
I like that. But you used a great word at the very beginning. You said you went to Vermont and you felt a recharge. So I think you kind of needed that. I don't know, Chad, how many times have you worked your ass off for a couple of weeks and you're like, I just need a fucking break. I don't want to be around people. I don't want even a beer in front of me. I just want to just chill. Want to be a nap. You know, I need a good nap. So I feel like you going to Vermont, in a way, Rach, was your way of kind of disconnecting to reconnect. And then you came back to Utah and you're starting, not anew, but you're starting, let's go. Like, your foot's in the right direction, because, you know, currently you're working with Chad at Hopkins Brewing and you're back home. You're home. You know you're home. You're well-loved, and I think shit's going to happen, and you're going to continue to go from there. And I like the fact that you got to go experience Vermont, kind of get out of the house, if you will, and kind of figure that out and come back. So it's funny that, like, the Vermont industry didn't have the same kind of camaraderie as the Utah one did. That's just, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, you said that you went to that local bar, the Rev, right, and you all got together and just tied one off. Like, y'all, it's cool. At the end of the day, you can just go have a beer at whatever bar or dive you go to, and then you're all friends or family is what I call it, right? You're family. And then you can just talk about whatever and like, yeah, Bob, I know your life, and we may not be friends on a real basis, like a daily basis, but like, I get where you're coming from, and you can talk to me whatever you want. So that's cool you still had that in Vermont, but the fact that the community's not there, it kind of like disappoints me in a way.
Yeah.
And that's not to say it's like a bad community. And maybe, you know, maybe I had way too high of expectations for it coming from Utah. And it could have been different, you know, not, you know, outside of COVID. But in talking to other people, I was like, oh, do you guys ever, like, go to other breweries and, like, as a team and check them out? And they're like, no. So,
fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know whenever Chad releases the beer, Derek and I are like, all right, we got to go try it. Or, like, or Derek, because Derek lives up here, I'm like, Derek, give me that now. Until he'll have to pick it up for me or vice versa, because I know Chad and Matt will come support us when we release new beers that they haven't had before. I like that. But you do have one more from Vermont you brought.
Actually, no. This is from Maine.
Oh, shit. Even further north. Oh, basically French.
Oh, gosh.
Tell us about this one, then.
Hang on one sec. Sorry. If you know me, I'm a really slow drinker, especially when I'm talking. So, okay. So this is a beer from Allagash. And so... basically, when I finally decided, like, I was coming back here, coming to work at Hopkins, and Von Trapp was so supportive. They're like, we totally understand, like, we know how much you miss Utah. Like, I left on really good terms. But I gave myself, like, a month-long, like, sabbatical, I called it, to actually finally have time to explore Vermont and New England.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd never been to Maine. I'd never been really to Massachusetts. Like, I kind of, like, spent, like, one day in Boston. But I went, and then one of my colleagues that I do stuff with the BA with, Jason Perkins, from Allagash, he was like, oh, before you leave this part of the country, like, you know, come check it out. And so, went up to Portland, Maine, which is an amazing place. Everyone should go to Portland, Maine and just eat and drink the whole time. Amazing food, amazing beer. And I felt like that was actually, like, the community there reminded me a lot of Utah. Like, all the breweries you went to, they're like, oh, yeah, I play softball with this guy. And, like, you should check out this place. And we all hang out.
So
and
that's cool.
Yeah. But also in the sense, like, everyone seemed to be very much, like, all local products and ingredients and stuff. And so everyone's heard of Allagash, you know. They're pretty big. They're all over the country. But so I went there, and I was so impressed on this tour that despite how big they are, their commitment to local was just incredible. Like, even in terms of, like, oh, yeah, we wanted to, like, basically, like a hopnik or a hop torpedo. Like, oh, we decided, like, we wanted to use this for dry hopping. But we were, instead of ordering it from Europe, like, we got a local fabricator to build us one. Like, you know, like, even on that level, I thought that was so cool. And then just using as much local ingredients as possible. They're even, like, they've got, like, an orchard that they're trying to grow stuff on site. Just, like, really taking care of the community. And it felt, they felt more like a small brewery, even though, you know, they're not.
Right.
And that's something awesome. That means a lot to me. So this is particularly, it's a part of their From Maine with Love series, which is only available, like, it might be only be available from the brewery itself, but definitely, like, only in the state of Maine, which is another cool thing. Like it's like special beers that they're just keeping local. And so this one in particular, it's number 5, and it is a tart pale ale with juniper and sea salt.
Yum.
Ooh, juniper from the East Coast sounds fun.
Oh, yeah.
So the From Maine with Love on the website says you're going to head to the brewery to try these special beers.
Yep.
The From Maine with Love series offers first ever taste of new Allagash creations. Ideas for these innovation beers can come from any employee at a brewery. That's really cool.
Yeah, that was another thing. They had a really awesome, like, internal R&D setup. Like, yeah, I can't say enough good things about them, which is funny because it's like, I know it seems like a silly thing, like, oh, I have this Allagash beer, but, you know, it was a cool experience. And I think it reminded me a lot of Utah because really even cool. The biggest Utah breweries, you know, they'll do similar stuff.
Yeah.
And it's there's cool. A beautiful art on the label. It's actually like the main coastline. Oh, it's cool.
That's like an actual picture.
Yeah. And I do have a few other beers from this series, and it's like different pictures of actual places in Maine. And just, I don't know. I love it.
This is really cool. I'm really impressed, and I haven't even been there. The only Allagash I've ever had was a Belgian wit, and I was really impressed with it.
That's funny. Because actually,
just packed last month.
Super new.
This is fresh, or very fresh. Cheers.
Cheers.
And I don't think I've tried this one yet, so we're tasting it for the first time together. But I get excited about juniper. So.
Oh, that's nice. Ooh, I love this. It's tart pale ale, and it is. It's just got a nice tartness to it. It's not like sour in your face. It's like, it's nice tartness to it.
4.2%. Nice and sessionable.
Oh, yeah. That's crushable. That's
salt
easy.
Salt on that's nice. I mean, yeah. It's almost like a goza, but not.
Yeah. But other shout out, if you like wild, cool, funky beers, Oxbow Brewing in Maine was also really cool. Yeah, they're doing some cool stuff. Nice. And also just like super nice people.
That's really cool.
I wish I had more time to go to different breweries there, but... we also, there's a beer bar up there called, Navari Res. I would say it might be like the best beer bar I've ever been to, just out of their selection of everything from like Belgium, to like everything across the US. Like we had fun there. Really so, cool. But just all the food.
Juniper on this one you said?
Yeah. And I wish I was getting more of that.
I'm trying to pick up the juniper. Chad, do you get juniper on this one?
No, not too much.
It's still tasty, though, but that's... Oh, man, I love juniper, and I was really excited. I'm still enjoying this, but...
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I like how it's... It says tart, but it's a gentle tartness. It's not a puckery tart.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting the juniper in there.
I'm getting a little bit towards the end, but...
I got, like, mid-palate.
I like it.
Like, thanks, comes Rage. Through with the tartness, and it kind of finishes off with that little sea salt.
We need to crush this because we got one more beer left.
That's fine. So that leads into my other questions for you. So then,
yeah.
You went to Vermont. So what made you pack up and leave to come back to Utah? Because you just yeah. got to Vermont.
I'm not like I was there for like 6 to 7 months,
right?
Which and it could have been longer, but it was a lot of weird factors that were just kind of like pushing me to realize that me being there was only temporary. I was trying to legally change my name back and try to deal with like government bureaucracy during COVID. It just was not happening. So I was never able to like get a new license or like change my car registration, which is fine. But I was staying with my aunt and uncle in their amazing house, and they originally were like, oh, stay as long as you want. But then my aunt's family, like her kids, because they're not like, it's a complicated family relationship, but basically like his like second wife, like all her family was coming up, and she was like, okay, like we've had this plan forever. I need like all available bedrooms for all my kids and their kids. So she was like, we just like, eventually we'll need you out by like June something. I was okay. And then like housing market is potential. I think for buying houses, worse up there right now by far than here. Rentals were okay, but there just weren't many. And so like I just was having issues finding an actual place to live. And then I was getting really burnt out at Von Trapp, like I was saying. And to the point where like, you know, like I still loved it, but I was like, you know, I'm having like a lot of signs of like high stress, like severe short-term memory loss, just like tired all the time. I was like, you know, no matter what, like I probably need to look for another job for my own like health and sanity. But then like Chad had been kind of talking to me like, hey, like come back. I'll figure something, like I could use some help. And I was like, okay, like, cause I always like loved hanging out at Hopkins anyway. Like even before I knew you, like I loved coming to the brewery.
Nice.
But then when we became friends and I spent a lot of time here, loved the beers, like loved it. So I was like, yeah, that would be cool. That'd be really cool. And it just felt like it was a bunch of things lining up, like timing all kind of worked out. And so I basically planned it around needing to be out of my current living situation.
Gotcha.
So that was a lot of the whole time frame. And I did like, and I'd met some people who were like, yo, you can like crash with me for a little bit and blah, blah, blah. Sure. But this whole time, like I just had like a pod of storage stuff, you know, I never really felt settled. And, you know, it's kind of hard, like being like partially homeless is how I felt. And, like I had a place to stay, but like, it wasn't mine. It was like a guest room.
Home.
No. And especially like, you know, after everything that I'd been through, you know, like I wanted that home feeling.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just kind of worked out. I don't know. It's still crazy. It's still crazy that I did all that looking back on it. Cause part of me, it's like it was a dream.
Girl. Like, yeah, look at it. It's life and who knows where the hell it's going to take us.
Yeah.
And it took you over there. It took you on the East Coast. Who knows why, but you learned something from it.
I learned so much from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're not going to regret that. Do you regret it?
Not at all.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad you kind of did that. Because like it was a recharge. That's the best thing I think you said today is it's a recharge, and then you're back and you're pedal to the metal. Let's go. So what do you do currently for Chad at Hopkins Brewing?
I feel like we're still kind of like figuring it out. my primary goal is like to just help Chad like take stuff off his plate because he's like one of the busiest brewers in Utah right now.
For sure.
But so I'm doing a lot of marketing stuff. I'm doing a lot of like admin and accounting stuff. And been doing some cellaring, but eventually brewing. It's on my business card, so we have it's legit. We have to make it happen.
Plan.
Yeah,
she'll eventually brew beer.
Yeah, and I will say like the first small batch I want to do is actually a Vermont Black IPA. Because fun fact, that is the actual original Vermont beer style that was created there.
Black IPA.
Yeah.
Cascadian Dark Ale, huh?
Yeah.
Well, no. That's the PNW style.
PNW style.
Yeah, that's the no-no
word.
Which
is pretty much the same, but with the PNW hops.
Gotcha. This is fascinating to me. I'm learning so much today.
It's a distinction. But yeah, Greg Noonan, like the, I don't know, I was going to say the father of Vermont beer, but that's probably not the right title. Father of Vermont brew pubs, that's for sure. Greg Noonan did a lot for homebrewers, did a lot for Vermont beer laws, but he basically kind of like invented that style
at
his brewery. Huh. So I'm going to get some Vermont grown hops. That's another cool fact. There's actually a lot of hops not a ton of hops, but like a lot of hops being grown out there, like East Coast, because it's actually like a really good climate for it. There used to, Vermont and New York used to grow a lot of hops, and then there was some situation where like most of those crops died, like
it was like a disease outbreak.
Yeah, and it was made like 1900s.
New York was one of the biggest hop producers in the country for a while.
Damn.
Yeah, and I forgot specifically what it was. Maybe like 100-ish years ago, maybe more. But yeah, it used to be a big place for it, and so they're trying to bring it back. So, but there's a few like smaller hop farms are in those areas. So I'm gonna get some like Vermont hops and use some Utah malt and make a little
collab, if you will. Utah meets West Coast meets East Coast.
Yeah, I like that. It just feels like a very fitting like first beer to brew coming back.
I'm excited to see that. So now that you're back in Utah, what's some goals you have in Utah that you want to accomplish? Not just here at Hopkins, I mean here in Hopkins, but like here in general.
I mean, I really want to get active in the guild again. And I know it's because of COVID and everything, but you know, it's, you know, I can't blame them because there is an executive director now, but for COVID, you know, there wasn't. And the board is all like it's all members, it's all people from other breweries, it's all volunteer based, and you know everybody had you know their own really intense shit to deal with during COVID. But I honestly feel like you know we breweries as a whole I think did surprisingly well during COVID. Yeah. I was particularly just blown away at Keto's with the amount of people coming in, getting to go only, just buying tons of beer, and also just like tipping so well, like literally taking care of our employees, like thanking them for being there. Yeah. And I feel like across the board, like breweries experienced this. And I think now, you know, if we were talking to the state, like we have all this data being like we have numbers to be like, hey, people chose to spend money here. People chose to come and support this industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of low hanging fruit with some of that because all of, like most of these representatives that have been elected, they're like, oh, like I'm a small business owner. Like I'll support small businesses. I'll do all this. I'm like, cool. Well, we're small businesses. And actually like I got to, before I moved, I got to do a virtual hill climb with Jeremy Raganese where we had like virtual meetings with aides to some of our, to senators, to representatives. And sort of, because at that point in time, we were advocating for them not to raise the federal excise tax, like per barrel for the amount of beer we produce, because it had been lowered dramatically. And then if that special rate ran out, we would have been so screwed. I think it was triple, like what the taxes would have gone up.
Oh, damn. I had no idea about that.
No.
Yeah, it was a very intense thing that no one knew was on the line. But obviously, like, you know, there was really no reason for them, especially during COVID, not to approve keeping that excise tax rate the way it was. So it ended up being fine.
Right.
Crisis averted. But and also, I can't say enough nice things about Jeremy Raganese from Uinta. Amazing human. Absolutely amazing human.
To add to that, he is a badass. For working for such a big brewery, you know, yeah. He is a cool dude. And he came in here and had a beer with me. You should interview him.
Oh, yeah.
He came in here and had a beer with me when Rich came back here to the little party. Yeah. Jeremy stopped by and he had a beer with me. He's like, dude, I love what you're doing here. Like,
that's cool.
And we talked about Uinta and what's been going on there. And he's just always been a really good dude. So I think it's a good part.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Great part of that brewery. So
hell yeah.
Yeah. So he and I ended up being the ones doing this, and it was very last minute for me. Nico, who was the executive director, who now has Lincoln Street Farm. Total shout out to them because it's an incredible urban farm.
Oh,
you can see them at farmers markets. Yeah.
Nicole is a badass.
Oh man, you should interview like so many great people in the state for your interview. Yeah. So she was like, "Hey, can you fill in for me on this hill climb thing? Because I got farm shit." And I was like, "Okay, tomorrow, sure, I got this." Yeah. But so he and I did this, and we're both kind of in the same mindset. Like, hey, you know what, like. We're not just going to be like, oh, don't do this. We're going to be like, hey, like, you know what? These are the other industries that small breweries support. And this is literally like, you know, at a brewery this size, like, you know, if we have to pay another like $40,000 in taxes a year, that's someone's full-time salary, or that's two like part-time salaries.
Yeah.
Or that's so. And the amazing thing is like so many breweries here, even like startups, donate a lot back to local charities. Mm. And you know what? Like if you're pitching pennies, I'm sorry, but that's going to be the first thing to go if you need to worry about making payroll and things like that. So we brought all of these things up, and, you know, like, we support local, like, packaging companies, we support local ingredients, we support so much that is not, that has nothing to do with alcohol. Like, we are a really integral part of the whole economy of Utah. And a lot of them were like, and because a lot of these aides are like, well, I don't drink, but they were like, thank you for saying this, because most, like, people lobbying for, like,
have
they,
no idea.
Yeah, they don't take it back to the people, and we're like, oh, we will. Like, you know, and we actually talked, apparently, like, Romney's aide was like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, let him know. Like, he probably liked a tour brewery, and we were like, yes.
Bring it. Yes, right? You know? Come on.
So I think there's a lot of opportunities, but, and the number one thing that I think we should be able to change, it's illegal for us to donate beer to nonprofits. That is the most ridiculous thing, that there's no argument for why that should be a thing. Even if you have to extra document it, be like, oh, yeah, here's, like, it's a nonprofit. They have this number. Boom. Here you go, state. We gave them this beer. So instead of, you know, them losing out on, like, that, like, however much of the cost of beer to them, like, let them have the full donation amount.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. Like, no one, because I feel like, you know, sure, Utah's a red state, but I feel like they still vote in a lot of times, like, they'll vote in favor of, like, helping people, like, good issues. Like, they approve medical marijuana, even though I'm sure most of the state doesn't actually agree with marijuana. They're like, oh, if it's for medical reasons and the person needs it, why do I care?
Let's
you know?
Yeah, let's help,
like,
someone out.
Yeah, increase Medicaid. You know, like, I think at the end of the day, people in Utah care about other people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, there's a lot of brewery issues where I'm like, okay, this is just hurting small businesses or hurting nonprofits or hurting people in a low income bracket, like hurting people who are servers, like, you know, but also, especially after COVID, you're like, if we can be like, hey, look at all these people who, even if they were down on their luck, we're still supporting this industry. Like, I'm sorry. Why is it illegal for us to be like, hey, you know what? Thanks for coming in. Here's a free beer on us.
Yeah.
Here's 20% off your tab. That's not telling people to drink more. That's thanking them for supporting an industry that's not even about alcohol. Like, when the craft beer industry is supported, all these other industries
get
supported.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn.
That's a big thing that I say about craft. Like, craft beer isn't just, it's not just beer. It's not about making beer. It's about a community. It's about driving force of just making the world a better place, you know?
Yeah.
Bringing community and supporting businesses and, you know, just having fun.
Yeah, like, we are so integrated in so many aspects of the community here. And I think what it is, like, we just need a voice. Overall, like, we're still kind of new as a group. But yeah, there's been craft breweries here for a while, but, you know, in the numbers and the notoriety that we're getting, that's still kind of new. And so I think we just need to get to the point where we can be really forceful. And, like, you know, I think we've leaned on, like, the restaurant and the bar industry, which is separate, you know, like, we have some similarities, but we have tap rooms, but we're the manufacturer and we have some different factors to worry about. I know we've kind of leaned on some of, like, the bar and restaurant people to help drive stuff like serving High Point, which, I mean, that's another ridiculous thing. Like, oh, you can serve High Point if you put in a can first. And so, you know, I'm all for that whole environmental argument. Like, we're literally just throwing away packaging when we do this. If we're serving High Point at our own brewery, like, why do we have to put in a can first? Like, I don't care if
doesn't
we, like,
make any sense.
Yeah, by all means, put restrictions on the serving size. Like, you know, no one needs more than, like, an 8-ounce or 10-ounce pour of a high-gravity beer. Gotcha. But let us, like, put it in a keg. Like, let people try our product.
I think we need to start a Taste Masters lobbying, you know.
Something like that. Something, I mean, like, you can get wine and cider on tap for pretty much as high ABV as you want, but it's limited to 5-ounce pours.
Yeah.
Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
If I'm going to order a barley wine, I don't want more than 5 ounces of that.
No.
Like, if I have to, like, usually you order a barley wine, it seems counterproductive because you order a barley wine. Some of those bottles are 16, 17 ounce, like something from Red Rock. They're 16.9 ounce bottles, you know, where, or 12 or 20s or 22s. Like, there's all these different big sizes, and that's like, I'm not going to buy that unless I'm going to split it with somebody, you know?
For sure.
So if you get a 5-ounce pour, that's even less than, like, splitting some of those bottles.
But as an artist, you want to showcase your barley wine, but you can't because no one wants to drink it because it's a...
That's all you're going to drink.
Yeah. You're done.
Yeah.
I can see that.
It's silly. And then, like, at that point, you know, you're throwing the packaging away. You're probably throwing some of the beer away, too, because someone's not going to drink it. But if they do and they feel like they need to, like, that's making people drink more. You know, like, it's... and we all know this. Everyone who drinks in Utah who knows the laws, like, they know it's very antiquated. It doesn't make sense. It's counterproductive to the message of the state. Like, we don't want drunk drivers. We don't want this, like, and I think we just really need to sit down and be like, okay, same goals. We don't want anyone to drink and drive when they try our product. Yeah. We don't want anyone to get totally shit-faced and be inappropriate in our tap room. Like, we don't want to be a bar, you know? And also, like, there at least should be a license where, like, if, so Keto's, like, if Keto's got a bar license, they would literally have to have some liquor options. They could not just sell their High Point.
Right.
That's crazy,
too. There needs to be some sort of manufacturer's license. Yeah. And if somebody wants to get drunk, I mean, they will get drunk. Like,
yeah, but they're probably not going
to
come
to other ways to get drunk. Like, even if you are limited to that much, you know, to a 5% beer at a bar, like, if somebody wants to get drunk, they will still find a way to get drunk.
Yeah. It's
we're just not limiting with this draft law.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's the same thing. It's like, it's, you know, it's up to the bartenders, up to those people to cut them off whenever they're like, hey,
yeah,
like,
it's
sorry.
Their job,
no.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. So why can't they do that if they're doing 5 ounce pours of High Point on draft? And it's better for everybody. So we just need to sit down. We need to actually be like, hey, LDS legislators, like, we're on your side too. Like, we don't want anything bad to happen, but we want our small businesses to not be screwed over, and we want to showcase our product. Because I haven't seen this yet on Hopkins social media, but I'm sure it'll come up. But there are a few people who would message Keto's, be like, hey, we're doing a beercation to Utah. Like, that's starting to happen. Like, we are starting to become a beer destination. And you know, it's a thing that Utah's known for. Instead of trying to fight that, like, embrace it. Let's do it in a safe way, you know? Because that's another thing. Like, sure, like, coming here for the first time, the altitude does get you when you're drinking, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, like, let's work together and make it a cool beercation destination.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And let's stop making this be a weird place to have to explain all our rules to...
And offend people.
People in all other 49 states about our unique laws here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's always a thing when people come in here. It's like, you're not from here. Oh, okay. Let me tell you. Let me lay it out for you.
You almost roll your eyes. Here we go. Gotta explain this to you real quick. No, but Rachel, I feel like you're doing awesome things for the community here in Utah, the craft beer scene here. And I know you're a part of the Pink Boots, right, here in Utah? Mm-hmm. And I feel like you are always keeping tabs on the girls in the Pink Boots while you're out in Vermont. And especially now that you're back, I mean, you're still here. You're still in the meetings. Are you part of the guild by chance? The chapter, if you will?
Of Pink Boots?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. I feel like there should be more Pink Boots. I'm with you on that one. I feel like more... I think they should open it to, like, bartenders and servers.
It is open to them.
Is it? Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's the thing. I think they just don't realize, or they're afraid, because also, like, the core women in our chapter, like, most of them do work in production and they've been there for a long time. But we've talked about this, like, we need to stop, like, when we get together, just like, oh, hey, best friend. We'd be like, no, like, we're going to meet the new people who come. Like, we're going to make it a point to bring new people and appeal to them. And just like, we're not meaning to be exclusive, but I think that we kind of are. But it is, like, women in general, like, you know, there is a lot of times, like, there's that barrier to break into the industry, and it can be hard. I think sometimes other women honestly don't make it easy. But part of that, I think, is because, like, a lot of us had to work really hard to get where we are, and, like, there could be some defensiveness there. But, you know, like, with everything, like, the whole craft beer industry is going to be stronger the more united we are. And so I want to go around and, like, any woman serving in a craft beer bar, I'm going to be like, hey, like, Do you want to learn more about beer? Like, is that why you're here? Or, like, you don't know? Like, just come hang out.
Come do the
thing. Just come talk about beer. Like, learn stuff about beer. Like, our next meeting is going to be, like, at Solstice Malt.
Yeah,
it's going to be really cool. And I just, you know.
Shout out to James.
James Weed.
Oh, man. We have so many name drops. So many great people that we've name dropped in this. Because there's so many great people here.
But speaking of name dropping, Jamie Burnham.
Jamie Burnham,
brings us our last beer.
The final
beer.
So
explain that one to us.
The final beer, and it is the only Utah beer that I picked to bring because I really think it's a culmination of everything I love about Utah. But it is, Jamie Burnham, who's been on this show, you should interview her separately for everything she's doing at Ogden's Own.
Her canned cocktails are amazing too.
Yeah. She's my Utah beer mom. I think she's everyone's Utah beer mom. I mean,
her and Corinne, I think, are for me Utah beer mom.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, like when she had cancer personally, we did this massive fundraiser at Keto's for her, and so many guys were coming in, like guys from other breweries, just guys in general, like who had homebrewed. They're like, Jamie taught me to brew. But there are like actual brewers who work for commercial breweries now. They're like, Jamie taught me how to brew 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I used to go get recipes from her.
Right? Like, just, you know, but just the most wonderful, amazing person.
Sure, to the beer nut.
Yeah, for years, yeah.
Yeah. Beer Nut, Bayou, Roja, and then Keto's, and now is a distiller at Ogden Zone. And she's a cancer survivor. And, you know, she made it through. She had an amazing, rough journey, but she made it through. And then the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society here in Utah, it's a national organization, but there's a Utah chapter of that. It's actually the only time I almost left the craft beer industry was to work for them. It's a really great organization. They do so much to help cure not just blood cancer, but all cancers. And they have this this campaign every year for fundraising called Man/Woman of the Year. And basically, you know, you nominate community figures to run for like Person of the Year. And every dollar donated in their name counts as a vote. So, and like, you know, they don't like, they just win the notoriety, right? Like, quote unquote notoriety. The point is just like to raise a bunch of money to defeat cancer. That's the only loser. But my friend Allie, who works, I met her working at Keto's, but she works for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society now, and she has her own amazing journey with all of that. And today's her birthday, that's not when
Allie.
Yeah,
Allie
in the past, because when you're listening to this, it'll, you know, whatever. But as we're recording this, on the day we're recording this, it's actually her birthday, and I love her. She and I convinced Jamie to be a candidate, and it's normally people who are like, local news personalities or like real estate moguls, you know, like someone like that. But we're like, no, Jamie, like the craft beer industry's got you. Like,
yes,
we can do this. And so, and she was runner up. So she didn't win, but she was runner up. And through her campaign, I think it was like, we raised like $35,000 just in her name, which is amazing.
That's
about fantastic.
But, Fisher did a collaboration beer with her, with some of the proceeds going to her campaign. It's called Angling for a Cure. And so a lot of you probably already had this, but I didn't get a chance to have it. So I was actually on her fundraising campaign, like from Vermont, and was like doing that remotely. And like got some like Vermont people to donate as well. But it, you know, like another way I just stayed connected with everything. And so, yeah, so like I helped a little bit with this, but so I haven't actually tried this beer yet, this beer has
same.
What?
Wait, is it a 5% or is it a...
It's the red ale.
Yeah. It's the... Okay,
is
wow.
Is it a high point?
A dry hopped red ale. Boom. There it is.
Yeah.
Oh, my
if
God.
If it was on tap, I had it, but...
No, I haven't had it.
Oh, no, it's 5%. I'm probably had this then.
Yeah, I think it was on tap. I obviously don't know because I wasn't there for the actual...
You were on the opposite end of the country.
Just a little bit.
So, I mean, shout out to Jamie. We're going to open this in honor of her and... shout out to the Pink Boots too. I think the Pink Boots need to be bigger and let's go grow it.
And
let's
Fisher,
go.
Yeah, I mean,
Fisher is one of the OGs.
Yeah, so this isn't a Pink Boots thing. This is a Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Fisher Jamie thing. But you're right. Everything you said about Pink Boots is right too. You're like we're gonna grow Pink Boots. We're gonna be even more united.
I'm so excited, it's really cool to see that, you know, that environment and that community is growing, and it's just cool that Utah can come together and. In a time of need, someone in our community needs help. We all stepped up and like tried our best to help. That was really cool to watch. I remember watching and being like, "Good God,
badass!
This is super cool."
It was so cool.
We're a family.
I gotta say, it wasn't just Fisher who stepped up to do a collaboration beer like this. And Chet, you did a something with Tito's vodka. I know.
Yeah, they did a donation too, with Tito's. So that was really nice of those guys.
TF. Did something. I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, I know there were a lot of breweries who definitely helped support Jamie in this, and thank you so much. I guess I should have looked that up to officially name drop, but like, you know who you are, and I love you.
Oh, yeah. Jamie also put on that homebrew competition.
Yeah, the homebrew competition.
Oh, Red Ale. Yep. And, Bewilder. Yes, so definitely. Thank you, Bewilder.
I brewed homebrew. Matt brewed homebrew.
Yeah.
A
bunch of friends did.
Amanda brewed homebrew. Like, so we had three of us here at the Hop.
Yeah,
putting some
beers.
Really
cool.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Well, cheers on the last one, my friends.
Cheers.
Thanks, Rachel, for bringing this. I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Also, it's a hoppy red ale, so we kind of serve it a little bit back to a nice red something, but...
One of my favorite styles.
Yeah. What?
I love malty and hoppy.
Yeah.
Oh, the sweetness on that malt. Good God.
I wish I actually knew what hops were in this off the top of my head. I'm sorry, I didn't do enough research on the beers
Let's go over and ask Colby, hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's great, though. It's really piney, which I really enjoy. It feel and, like, the art on the cover is really beautiful. It's someone fly fishing. So, also, like, I was trying to come... I tried to come up with the label
like a lady
for this.
Fly fishing.
That's Anna, right?
Yeah, who made that. So, I initially just made, like, a fly fishing lore, but I came up with the name, like, Angling for a Cure, because I'm like, okay, how do we tie fishing and Jamie and
Well done,
cure?
Rach.
But, yeah, but then, I mean, this artwork is amazing, and it's perfect, but it's, you know, someone fly... It's a lady fly fishing on... like in a scenic wilderness spot, and I feel like the taste of this beer really jives with the picture for me.
And that's exactly what I want to do right now. Fly fish on that spot.
Right.
No, but
do you fly fish?
I don't. I need to learn.
You
really
should.
It's a great place to learn, is what I've been told. Obviously.
Yeah.
Utah.
It's a great place to do everything.
And which brings me to the point, Rach, I'm glad you're back in Utah because this is a great place to be. It's a great place where you should be. I feel like you need to be here. And I feel like for some reason in your life, it's going to be taking you to different places and it's going to always come back to Utah for some weird way. But I'm glad currently right now you came back to Utah and you're here now. I know, Chad, behind the scenes, behind your back, he's been talking highly about you because he needs you and he does care about you highly. I know this community and this in the craft beer scene, everyone fucking loves you. I don't know a single person who doesn't love you. I've known you for less than a year and I fucking love you. And I supported you on the way out there. I'll support you till the end of your industry career here. I mean, whatever you do, whether it's digging up old dead people or brewing beer, I'll be there helping you out. Thank you so much for coming and talking about this journey because it's been so fascinating, so surreal. I mean, oh my God, I had no idea. I've only known you from, I think when I first met you, I put you in my phone as Ketos Rachel until now. It's going to be different, right? But I knew you from Ketos until now. I'm like, oh my God, you have so much to bring to the table. And your voice, I'm glad you gave me the time of day to come and talk to me and Chad and talk about your story. I mean, Chad probably didn't know part of your story too, but the fact that you went from the East Coast to Utah, back to the East Coast, back to Utah, I'm so excited to see where your journey takes you next. And don't stop. Like, don't stop continuing what you're doing. And oh my God, I feel like Chad's kind of secretly spoiled having you on his team because you're going to kick ass and you're going to make his life a lot easier.
I'm very grateful. When she left here, I was really sad. I'm like, the community just feels it's really missing a big part. And Rachel was a driving force out here. Like, I know COVID kind of slowed things down with our little community here, but when she was gone, it was just like, fuck. Like,
kind of made me cry, guys.
You're a
so we had talked
big at bat for us.
We had talked, and I'm like, I would love for you to come help me out here. She's like, let me figure out some shit out.
Like, yeah. Cool. Well, I was like, dude, you could have said this like 3 months ago, and I wouldn't have left.
I wasn't ready.
Again, for you leaving, you said it was a recharge, and you needed that recharge because the battery can only do so much, right? And I know that from my personal experience because I drive a Prius. You know, you gotta recharge that battery for a certain amount of time.
But Rachel, she told me, she's like, you can just hire someone else for now, like if you need to. And I'm like, nah, I'm like, I'll wait. I'm like, this is a Rachel job. So I told her, I'm like, this is a Rachel job, and I will wait until you're ready, and then this will be your job.
Yeah.
It is. Like, that's what I just do all the things. Rachel
it's,
stuff.
It's when the
I
Rachel
showed
job.
Up, when I showed up, like, the first day I came back, they're like, oh, cool. What are you going to, like, meeting, like, all the people who worked at Hopkins? They're like, what are you going to do? I'm like, Rachel stuff. General Rachelness.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, because we're still trying to figure it out. And I still am, but, you know, it's fun. Like, I like that. I like having different stuff to do. But thank you so much for all your kind words. Thank you for what you're doing. I mean, it's a Utah beer, but not just beer, but like every, like, you interview such a cool range of people, and I love that you're doing this, and I will support you.
Stop.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And also, you missed it on the intermission. We're like, we have to interview you. We're all the people that he's interviewed, we're gonna revolt, and we're gonna have a David interview day, because he's fascinating too.
Nah, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm just an average Joe. It's fine. No, but my last question for you, Rach, is, what impact do you want to leave on Utah beer, the Utah craft beer community?
The impact I always want to leave anywhere I go, which might stem from being in Girl Scouts, but I want to leave a place better than I found it, you know? And not to say, I can't even say, like, that there's nothing wrong with Utah. There's a few things that aren't wrong, but there's things that we know that we can improve on. And I want to help make that happen because I think I've realized... You know, doing, like, just being brave enough to kind of speak up and be like, hey, this should change. Or like, hey, like, let's do this. Sometimes just, even if I'm scared to do that, if I say it, other people will be empowered to step up and agree. And then that's how you get a community coming together. Absolutely. And, you know, if I have to be like that catalyst that kind of like gets Utah to be like, okay, you know what? Like we've been talking about this for a while, but we are going to like full force do it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, do that, but also just make connections with people.
Yeah.
You know, even if it doesn't change a law or something, just the friends and the connections I've made out here have been so amazing. I just want to keep growing that. And we get new people all the time coming out here. And, you know, there's always new friends to make. There's always new cool things to do.
Yeah.
And I just, but yeah, I want to make some change. If I eventually leave Utah, like I'm going to be like, cool, like these laws changed. Like it is a better environment for craft breweries to thrive now. Like I think that would be my ultimate goal.
God, and, Rich, you're and, so and
more
cool.
inclusive too. Cause Utah it like overall we need to step up diversity for the state, but
absolutely.
You know, I think we should just shine a light on some of the amazing diversity that we already have in our community.
Yeah.
So just make everyone feel welcome and feel like they have a voice here.
It's been a powerful episode. I tell you what, Rachel, your story is so cool, and I cannot wait to see what's in the future for you. I really do.
Well,
holy
you.
Shit, you're going to do great things.
I hope so.
I just hope I'm... don't forget about me when you get all famous and cool. Oh, my God. You're super cool.
I definitely won't. I won't forget about anybody.
Oh, my
here.
God. But, Chad, is there anything you have for us or want to ask Rachel or tell Rachel? Any questions you have for us today?
No, I think I pretty much said everything. I'm just so happy to have her back. And it was so cool to, like, see... the people that came together for Rachel's return, like people are just like so stoked, like all like a lot of people in the industry are just very happy to have Rachel back.
Right? Yeah, that was cool. That's surprising. I'm still like getting used to the fact that like people know me and they like I don't know. It was just like weird for me. I'm naturally like initially was like very when I first moved to Utah, I was still super introverted, and I think since being here, like I came into my own. I was like, oh, like people know me, like. I can do things. I don't like Utah was great for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's also why I wanted to come back. Like it helped me be the best version of me.
That's
so
beautiful.
You made an impact on this community. So
made an impact on me. I don't know. It's like same mutual impact.
So don't give that up. That's all I'm going to ask. If I can say one thing is don't give it up and keep doing what you're doing because you're doing a great job. And like I keep saying, you're going to do great things. And I'm so excited to see what happens. I really am.
Thank you.
And I support you 1000%. And I know Chad does too.
Thank you, guys. That means a lot.
Rachel, is there anything else you have for us or any questions you have for us today?
No, I don't know. No, I think I'm good. Just seriously, thank you. It's cool. And thanks for staying in touch. Like, literally, like I met you basically that like one time and then we stayed in touch like online and stuff.
I have an
stuff,
envelope
and...
to show you after this that I have as a return. I have one of three envelopes I got returned. I have the stickers for you in an envelope.
Yeah,
so
he's the worst at mailing things.
I'm not the worst. I can't get it to you, apparently.
Like, everyone else managed to mail me stuff.
Apparently, I am the worst at mailing things.
It's okay. He was trying to send me stickers so that I could put Tastemaster stickers around Vermont, and he tried, like, what, like,
three times,
and it never showed up.
Sent back. I have one in my bag right now for you.
Oh, my God.
Proof that I tried.
That's okay. You know what? I'm going to go back there, and then we'll...
I'll give you some.
The stickering reckoning will... I don't know. That's,
one day.
I shouldn't have tried to say it like that. Yeah.
No, but Rach, thanks so much for taking time out of your Saturday and being here and hanging out with us and telling your story. It's been a story, and I'm fascinated by it, and I can't wait to see... the next story. I can't wait to bring you back on. And Chad, thank you so much again for supporting me and supporting this podcast and supporting Rachel and bringing her back. Thanks for being an advocate for her because she's badass. You're a badass. And this community is so cool. And I don't want to ever break this beautiful relationship we all have.
Same.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing.
All right, guys, that'll do it for this episode. But until the next beverage, my friends.
Cool.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.